The Healthy Insights podcast features conversations with the leading minds in the field of health and well-being. Our hope is for you to gain insights, learn something new, and discover some valuable takeaways from our fascinating group of guests. Host Jim Narum is a respected leader with over 30 years of experience in the employee health and well-being field. The Healthy Insights podcast is brought to you by Asset Health, a comprehensive health and well-being services and technology provider. Asset Health's approach is based on actively cultivating the idea that your health is your most valuable asset.
Hello and welcome. This is Jim Narum, your host of the Healthy Insights podcast. This episode's special guest is Colette Volstead, a pioneering and legendary coach of multiple women's college, girls' high school, and women's community sports in the pre- and post-Title IX era. Colette Volstead's coaching career spanned 35 years in North Dakota and Minnesota. High school and college athletes today owe much to Coach Volstead and others like her. She started up women's basketball, volleyball, and track teams at North Dakota State University and also started up the women's college basketball program at Concordia College in Moorhead, Minnesota in the mid to late 1970s. I had the honor and privilege to be Colette's assistant women's basketball coach my senior year at Concordia. After her college coaching years, Colette was also a legendary high school girls basketball coach in North Dakota for 29 years. Her teams won many conference, regional, and state championships. In my conversation with Colette, she shares what it was like in the early days of women's and girls sports before and after Title IX, when it was commonly believed strenuous physical activity could ruin a woman's childbearing abilities. It's true. We've come a long way since then, thanks in large part to her determination, grit, perseverance, success of her many teams, and the positive relationships she built along the way. Colette Volstead has been inducted into a total of 9 Hall of Fames, including North Dakota State University, Concordia College, North Dakota High School Coaches Association, National High School Association, and several others. Colette Volstead received her bachelor's degree from North Dakota State University, and she continues to live in the Fargo-Moorhead area, stays active, and still continues to be a mentor and a leader to other women involved in advancing women's, girls, and community athletics. Colette, welcome to the podcast. I'm thrilled and honored to have you as a guest today.
I am thrilled to be here with you. It's a real honor. You and I had a lot of fun together coaching, and so this is really extra special.
It's hard to believe that it's been a little over 40 years ago since we coached together. I was your assistant, the assistant women's basketball coach at Concordia College in Moorhead, Minnesota, during my senior year of college.
You were just a rookie.
I was definitely a rookie. And, you know, at Concordia at the time, I was majoring in physical education, got my minor in health. And my plan at the time was to be a high school physical education teacher and a basketball coach. And I had the opportunity to get some coaching experience and was fortunate enough to be asked by Dr. Armin Pipo, the athletic director at the time, if I was interested in being your assistant coach. And I jumped at the opportunity.
And I was so lucky that you had accepted that position, because I learned a whole lot from you, and I never wanted a coach who knew less than I did. And at your young age and your background, it all worked out so that we meshed really well and saw the game from the same angle and with the same desire to give to those young girls our knowledge and teach them some things about the real world.
We had really had a great team that year. 1979 and 80. I'll date us both with that. But we were conference champions and state champions. We had one All-American player, Coral Besky, and we had 3 All-Region players, Nancy Halda and the late Kathy Meyer. But I think the one thing that I remember about our time together that one year is that we both shared a passion for the sport of basketball, and I valued, you were always so prepared for every practice and every game. And, you emphasized teaching fundamentals and it had a lot of innovations, but really more than anything, really emphasized the importance of playing as a team. Those were things that we shared that one year.
Well, with practice, I probably went longer in practice than I should have a number of times, but I never wanted them to have to face something that we hadn't practiced. And I wanted to eliminate things that they might not have seen in our practices. I wanted them to know that so we could be even more successful and they could be successful. Having you there to help me see things that we could do in our practices that would make them better, it was just a lot of fun, because what I didn't think of, you did think of. And you brought a lot of information from PLU, was it Pacific Lutheran University?
Yeah, my first couple of years of college, I went to Pacific Lutheran University and then transferred to Concordia. And the first year I was at Concordia, I sang in the Concordia choir, but was majoring in physical education. And so I wanted to get more background and experience in the field that I had chosen. And so, just was so fortunate to be given the opportunity to coach with you.
Well, my strong belief was you needed to understand your athlete, and then you had to understand them as individuals as well as their group dynamics. And I was always wanted them to learn the basic fundamentals. Because without those basic fundamentals, you are not going to be successful. The better your opponent, the better your fundamentals better be.
Well, and that's exactly right. And I think, looking back on 40 years ago, it's hard to believe, but that I didn't have a full appreciation then that I do now of just how innovative and special everything that you did to advance women and girls sports and athletics at a time when it was really not too many years into it, that where there wasn't any opportunities or very limited opportunities for girls and in high school and women in college to participate in college athletics.
In 1972, the United States Department of Education gave us the right to be treated equally, in which it stated no person in the United States shall, on the basis of sex, be excluded from participation in or be denied the benefits of or be subject to discrimination under any education program or activity receiving federal assistance. Once that was put in place, then the girls were being offered programs. College students were being offered programs. They didn't have the best equipment. They didn't have the uniforms. They didn't have the trainers, fans. They weren't really treated the same way. So back there in the 70s, things were quite a bit different. In my day, in the 60s, we just played anyway. Some people just played. It wasn't a big issue.
You started the women's basketball program, the volleyball program, and also coached track at North Dakota State University from scratch. So you were the first coach for those multiple sports at NDSU, which is now a Division I program in the NCAA.
We started in 65. I was teaching at Agassiz Middle School in Fargo. And the head of the Department of Women's Physical Education, there was no athletic department. There was men's departments of physical education and athletics and a woman's department of physical education. And all programs were to be run through there. In those years, before we were able to put a team on the court. It took 3 years, and it took a lady from Maryland out east to come and persuade these women who didn't think we should be playing that we should get started at this. Well, when NDSU played their first game, they had no uniforms. They wore their aqua shorts with white blouses that they had for physical education classes. That was our uniform the very first year. We had 4 games, no fans. And to practice, we were limited to Tuesday night Girls Recreation Association. We had 1 day, and that was like 7 o'clock, we'd go over there. I was able to get into the old field house after the boys played a game, and then we could push the bleachers back, sweep up the popcorn, wipe up the pop spills from the floor, and then we could practice. So those were pretty interesting times. In volleyball, the only place they let us practice was on the stage, and the stage lights were up above, and after we hit one of those, the rule was put your head down, and if you ever hit another one, put your head down. Back to the basketball court, one of my good friends took over the team, and the main floor was in the middle, but there were 4 baskets on a basket on each corner of that. And he said to me, Colette, you know, you could practice in those 4 corners while we're practicing on the main court, but whenever I would like to speak, when I want to talk, don't bounce the balls. So.
Yeah, you didn't get the prime practice time.
But way before that, when I was in college, I don't know if you want to hear this, we had what we called a Tri-College Sports Council, which finally was organized by Joan Halt from Concordia because she was from out east and she was an athlete and she couldn't figure out why these girls that needed this extra challenge weren't being offered anything. So in 1959, I was fortunate to be the representative from NDSU, and we had a Tri-College Sports Council. And so in the fall, we could go to Morehead State and play volleyball or swim. In the winter, we could go to Concordia and we could play basketball. But then we could go to NDSU and bowl in the spring. Before that time, this was pretty neat to be able to do. That was the first intercollegiate experience any of us ever had. But the thing was, before 59, when I first started, what we had to do is we had to take all of us girls from Morehead, or 12 from Morehead, 12 from Concordia, and 12 from NDSU would go, and we couldn't play against one another. We had to divide up and mix up on teams because it wasn't right for us to be competing. And afterwards, we had to go have oranges or drinks or cookies. That's that story. So when Ms. Halt got us organized into our Tri-College sports, that was a huge advancement. We were so excited we could play a game. And of course, I had played 100 and some before I even got there in high school.
During those early years, there was really the perception was is that, well, women and girls either can't or shouldn't engage in sports. Talk a little bit about that.
Okay. I'll take it from you. When I was at NDSU and a sophomore, I was lucky enough to be a representative to the 4th National Institute on Girls and Women's Sports. And the Institute, a number of people from the East, see, they started quicker into this competitive world for women. They charged the American Medical Association to do a study. And with luck, the study was about whether it was harmful on women to compete. And so at that clinic, they unveiled the results of that. And the results were that the third world country women were just fine in birth because in the third world country, the women had to do a lot of the hard work. The men, they just sat around and yes, I don't know. But anyway, And they were still able to have babies without much trouble. And so the report said that women should be able to participate. And so that was the big thing before, that it was too hard on our female organs if we did played a full court. That was just out of the question because it would just be too hard on us.
Oh my gosh. So some of the stories of, you know, starting up girls and women's basketball and athletics, because you coached volleyball, you coached when you went to Concordia, you were also the track coach for a couple of years when you were there. Some of those early days, you know, you'd mentioned about uniforms, and, you know, it's hard to believe now, but at the time there weren't women designed uniforms. Talk a little bit about your story of saying, okay, we need to have uniforms that are actually, you know, designed for women and girls.
Well, I went up to the AD at Concordia one night just as he was leaving. And I said, we need new uniforms. I brought one girl up with me or two. I can't remember. I said, look at them, raise their arms. And their bellies were showing. And I said, look at here, their shoulder. You can see all the way through and see everything. I said, those armholes are just too big. Well, he says, you go order some. So I knew Harvel was a company out in West Fargo. So I go out there and I talk to the gentleman out there and I ask him a few questions. And then I said, well, do you have these uniforms sized for women and girls? He said, no, they're men's sizing. I said, well, they don't work really well for my girls at Concordia. And he said, well, you bring them over and we'll size them. And you know what? They turned out perfect. And on top of that, when I went to Tennessee for the Final Four and Division One, there he was set up. He was selling Harvel uniforms and he recognized me.
He said, that's where it started for women and girls sizing.
I see you're selling women's uniforms. And we had quite a fun conversation. But Harvel, yeah, it all started in Fargo, North Dakota, and he started making them for Concordia College girls because I just couldn't figure out how we could continue to stay in patterns made for men.
You see, and I didn't know that story at the time that we coached together, but that was something that I didn't realize the state of where things were and that story, which is great.
Well, the other kind of exciting thing, Jim, was when the girls at Concordia were able to get their clothes washed. Well, I went to Dr. Armand Peeple, the AD, and I said, you know, could we have these girls get their clothes washed, their practice uniforms? Well, he said, if Bucky Mons says you can, that'll be fine. So I talked to Bucky. Bucky, he says, sure, just have them come and get a bag with a pin. Well, at first they put in their shirts, their shorts, and the socks. And I found out they weren't putting their bras in there and whatever. And, well, no, they aren't going to put them in there because what if he looks? I said, they don't look at that. He doesn't even open up your bag. He just throws them in the wash machine and that's it. Well, then they finally did that too. But here all these years they were carrying home those wet, sweaty clothes. The other thing, we never had a trainer either for a long time. I did the taping.
Yeah, you had to do all the taping, the driving of the van. You had more hats, and I wore a few of those along with you, but you did all the taping.
The taping, I was so fortunate to have been at NDSU where Dr. Israel was the athletic trainer, and he was nationally known. And I was also so lucky over at Concordia that he would call me up as well and say, Colette, you need to get over here. I have some new exercises for your players. And he always kept me apprised of everything that went on because I was a student of his at NDSU. So I was very lucky. I was super lucky.
Yeah. Well, and just, you know, some of the other challenges that I know you, you know, starting up new programs at NDSU and Concordia, just navigating and getting practice times. I know we wasn't quite what you described when you first started at NDSU, but there's always the men's team at Concordia always had a certain time that they had, and we designated to have practice at a consistent time. We went a little later in the evening where we had the whole gym to ourselves, but it was all something that had to be overcome at the time.
Well, it was about the time of Title IX, and I knew that the coach had been there for years and that it would be very difficult for him to have to switch every 2 weeks who was going to be there at 4 and who was going to be there at 6. So I went to Dr. Peeble, the AD, and I said, you know, I think it would be best if the girls just came in at 6 o'clock, because I had known at 6 o'clock the auditorium was quiet, and I would rather have had it quiet, and it made it so much nicer for coaching for you and I and for the players as well. So it was ideal.
Yeah.
Just to have a regular time and not do the other and mess.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it caused so much commotion over who was there and who's now and who's there.
Yeah. And I, you know, at the time, I didn't really have the full appreciation for that dynamic, but looking back on it, certainly do. But I remember we had uninterrupted practice times at a consistent time, and we could bounce the ball whenever we wanted to.
Yes, we did.
So one of the things that has got to be very interesting for you, having started out many, many years ago, having started programs that didn't exist and getting to the point where now you have a granddaughter that plays high school basketball, Addison Mack, who plays at Minnehaha Academy. And so it's got to be interesting and great for you to kind of see where the game has taken lots more skill and development that compared to the old days, and some of those perceived limitations aren't really there. Talk a little bit about that, and even women's athletics as a whole now are played at a very high level, and it's just fun to watch.
It was a thrill for me after having coached and knowing what it was like when I first started coaching. And then to sit and for 29 years, I ran the clock for NDSU, and I got a chance to watch some of the most outstanding teams that played there, because we held the national tournament I don't know how many times. And so the teams came from the East and the West. Yes, there's certainly been a change in the game, and there certainly has been a change in what a player must do to become successful and to move on to the college game. My own granddaughter now has a tutor. She begs to go to the gym every day, and she gets to do that. She goes to, well, first off, she watches every game there could possibly be on TV, and she's Steph Curry. She was Steph Curry. Then she is really proud of having her picture taken with Paige Bekaris, and that's her idol. But lately she's been talking a lot about Iowa's Caitlin Clark, who's very good as well.
Oh, yeah.
And she made the comment the other day that she played more like Caitlin Clark. But she works on all kinds of fundamentals, and the game has gotten to be three-point. It's a three-pointer now.
Yeah.
Heaven sakes, if more than two players on a team would ever shoot a
right
just a plain old jump shot. There isn't a jump stop anymore, is there? It's a floater.
Yeah.
You do your floaters and your step backs, and she's all into that. And when we were playing, oh my gosh, we didn't have tutors. Her mom never had a tutor. Her mom was pretty good, played really well. So, you know, it's just changed. The sad part about it is a lot of parents are driving their children to practice all the time when they don't want to. In Addison's case, that's her choice. And parents try to live through those children, and sometimes the children can't take it. Yeah. I mean, I had many that would come to me and say, my dad thinks I should be playing. I should be starting. I know I can't start. And then she'd come back again, and then she'd come back again. And I said, well, one day she came back and she said, I'm quitting. And I said, well, you're not going to go anywhere. You're going to be with me on the bench, and you're going to help me coach. And so she did. And she was just super happy. But many of them, you know, they're caught between the coach and the family of what they want to do. Or the guy who knew he wasn't supposed to peek in at the practices. And I just told him that at family night. Who do you suppose was standing at the door on this end? And I said, so-and-so, you're not supposed to be looking in. It's hard enough for these kids, let alone having you there. It wasn't long. I looked the other end, and he was at the other end. So then he went out the door, and I said, remember what I told you? You're not supposed to be here.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that's something that in terms of the evolution of the game, that's probably one of the things that's more of a negative development that has happened is parents have always been interested in probably trying to live through their kids. I think the other part of that is just if the kids have the desire and passion for the game, then they earn their way, they earn their spot. And if parents can let them do that, things work out much better. But we both know that isn't always the case.
Well, if they care for and really enjoy watching their child. But the other thing that's really tough is the fans who are so awful at a game and yelling and hollering, and the referees. I don't know how we're going to continue to get referees. Some of the stuff they say to the referees nowadays, it's unbelievable. And I suppose there are some coaches too that do a lot of yelling, which is not always necessary.
So let me change topics a little bit. So you have always been someone that has been very active and keeping healthy yourself. You currently are bowl regularly and golf regularly. Those are things that you enjoy doing. So what are some of the things that has helped you stay active and healthy over all the years?
Just by being involved in a lot of things. There, like going to basketball games as I got older, constantly going to basketball games, watching basketball games, but that doesn't give you much exercise. I ride the bike, a stationary bike. I wasn't very good at just going on a long walk because I thought that was boring. lifting weights, and I know stretching, those kinds of things, plus working around the yard and doing the duties that you have to do in the house and going to lunch with my friends, because I think you have to have that balance in your life. And now we've added pool, so we have a place that a number of us can go out and play pool. But golfing was so much fun. And then I ran a old pro golf program at Osgood Golf Course, which was just really fun. I think I had 140 to 160 men listed, and I knew pretty much all of them by their name and got to be very good friends with them. And this past year was the last year that I was going to do that. You know, there gets to be a place where you have to slow down a little bit. But bowling has always been my thing. I don't know. I was just always busy doing something. I can't tell you what all it was.
Yeah.
Writing history and just enjoying ball games, I guess. And
yeah. Well, and I think the other thing that you've always done is you've been a very active mentor for other women, and not just in basketball, but with other sports or just others that are female leaders in the Fargo-Moorhead area. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, a lot of people don't listen very well, but I like to listen to what they have to say. And I think just listening and sharing what some of the things that I had gone through that might be beneficial for them. I know that I have a lot of former student teachers that became very good friends. And oftentimes they'll call. Oftentimes many of my former athletes will call and want to know this, that. Just the other day I got a text from one out in Colorado. And then there's one in Arizona. And a lot of it was done through my sorority, Kappa Delta sorority. I was on the board there, and there's where a lot of the mentoring was done. And in school, some mentoring there of the younger teachers and sharing whatever I could with other coaches, the younger coaches that were coming up through the ranks. It was something that if I could, I would help them. Always being there for them.
Yeah, that was very clear. And in the state of North Dakota and the Fargo-Moorhead area, you know so many people and so many people know you. I know when we got together last summer with your husband, Roy, you know, he made the comment that we can't go anywhere where somebody doesn't say, "Oh, you're Colette Polstead. How you doing?" And you know everyone, or they know you.
And it happened right after you were here too.
Of course it did.
I say it's the hairdo. I really haven't changed the hairdo.
I remember that, and you're right. You're right. Okay, so I know we could go on and on and on and on. But one of the things that I always ask all of my guests, of all the things that we've talked about today, what are the three top things that you would want our listeners to remember from this episode?
First of all, you have to have significant people in your life. And that started out with my mom and dad. They were awesome role models. They provided an environment where we felt safe, and we learned a lot of things. As we grew older, they gave us tasks to do. We were assigned things to do, but they were always so appreciative of what we did, and they would tell us when we did it right and when we did it wrong. We learned a lot on the farm. You know, I shoveled grain and drove the tractors. And when I was 9, I was driving a truck full of grain and shoveling grain and helping. I mean, we were involved in the total farming process, let me tell you. From 15 on, I was driving a pull-type combine. My dad said, "Why get a hired man when I got Coley out there doing that?" So that was one thing that I felt very strong about, that you had to have significant other people. And then it would give you a self-worth, make you feel really good, so you'd want to keep going on. You had made you believe in yourself, and you have to believe in yourself. Whatever you begin to do, you should have a passion. When I was coaching and teaching, it wasn't really work. My teaching was never work. You know, coaching, I mean, it was a passion. I still wish I could coach one more game or play one more game. But within that, you have to persevere to be successful. Any little thing that comes in that's like a little roadblock, you can't back up and say, "Well, I got to quit." You need to jump over the hurdle. And if you get over the hurdle, keep on going. That's how you become successful. You have to have a passion, and you have to persevere. Never give up unless it's absolutely impossible. And you have to love people. And I cared for my players. I would do whatever I could for them and care for them. And I wanted them always to know exactly what to do so they could be successful. And I don't know. At the end, I always thought teaching was coaching and coaching was teaching. And you couldn't do either one without it. The thing I always, if you hear people say, well, I motivated somebody. No, you don't motivate anybody. You inspire them to motivate themselves and make their decisions. And when it comes right down to it, life is pretty simple when you have to make decisions, because there's really only two things you have to decide on. If you have a decision to make, okay, if I do that, is that good? If I do that, is that bad? So make a decision, but also, okay, what are the consequences? So you better pick the good consequences or pay the price. Those are some of the things I think you have to have. I couldn't have done it without some very significant people in my life, all the way through my life, starting with my parents. They were always there. From the lady at Interstate who knew that I had talent, but I was a little bit nervous about it. But she found the right place for me to work, and I ended up at the Fargo Public Schools as a secretary. I was a secretary before I went into coaching. Then when I got my job at the Fargo Public Schools for the assistant superintendent of schools, it was Jeanette Francine. She was a young person there, a little older than I, and she was always there to help me, as were most of the others. Then there was a handicapped lady there who taught psychology. Some of the classes from Central High School were in this building where I was secretary. And she used to come down and talk to me, and we would visit, and she was really an encourager. Miss Thompson was a dean of students at NDSU, and when I was president of Mortar Board, she was always there helping me get it just right. And then there's Hazel Detman, who is responsible for me being a physical education teacher, which led to me being a coach. And then there's Joan Hall, the lady who recognized that I had a lot of ability as an athlete and that I should be a coach. And as your life goes on, your friendship group comes like this, because there are all these down here that get a little jealous and drop off, but those at the top are the ones that really like you and believe in you no matter what you do.
Yeah. Well, I definitely understand and believe having passion and a love for people, it makes all the difference. And I just have to tell you that we only worked together for 1 year of your whole career, but you did have that kind of an impact on me, and I'm so grateful and that we did have the opportunity to work together and that we've kept in touch for all these years later, and still count you as one of my the people that has inspired me, I thank you for that.
Thank you, Jim. You gave a lot to me that you don't even know about. You remember all those late night talks?
I do remember.
What do we do next? Yes, you were in the perfect place at the perfect time for me.
Yeah, I believe that too. Yep. All right. Well, thank you for being a guest. I love the conversation and love the friendship over all the years. And we definitely will have to keep in touch. And I, loved watching your granddaughter play, a month or so ago. And that was just pure joy for me. So
you should have seen her the other night. Oh, she really played.
Oh, that's fun. That's fun stuff.
Well, Jim, this is, you're a true friend. I know how shocked I was when you showed up when I was installed as in the Hall of Fame.
Wouldn't miss
at Concordia College, and I'll never forget what the feeling I had when I looked up inside.
Wouldn't
you there.
Miss it for the world.
It's amazing what 1 year can do for friendship.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you.
You are so welcome, and I am so happy I did this.
Yeah, this was fabulous. I had so much fun and. Going back memory lane and also learning so much more about you and your background and the influence that you had on girls' athletics and women's athletics at the college level, you know, before and after we worked together. So thank you for your impact, and on behalf of all those girls and women that you you influenced and are continuing to influence, thank you.
You are so welcome. It was delightful to do this. There's probably one or two things that you would have liked to know, but we don't have time for that.
Yeah, exactly. We covered a lot. So thank you.
Yes.
Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app or player. We also encourage you to rate this podcast. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.